Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Albany, 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 what are we going to do with you? We will get the latest on the Senate coup and what it means in about 15 minutes. But we have a very special guest to start out today. Our first visit as New York's junior United States Senator from Kirsten Gillibrand, appointed by Governor Patterson this year after Hillary Clinton left to become Secretary of State. The appointment was controversial among many New York Democrats, as you know, because of Gillibrand's conservative record on issues like guns and immigration. But her position seemed to be changing. Her support seems to be solidifying, and most of those threatening to challenge her in a primary are backing off. So, Senator Gillibrand, welcome back to WNYC, and belatedly, congratulations on your appointment.
Thank you so much. It's a privilege and an honor to be on your show.
Before we get into the U.S. Senate's business, how about the state Senate's business? You come from Albany and Albany politics. Anything you want to say about the coup in the state Senate?
Well, you know, it's disappointing, and I would much prefer it to remain under Democratic control. The concern that I have mostly is that a lot of the issues that I care a lot about may well be put on hold or won't have the opportunity to be voted on. So, you know, things like gay marriage, ethics reform, renters' rights, those are all issues that, you know, I'm working on the federal level on some degree, and it's going to be that much more difficult now.
Do you want to call on anyone to do anything in particular here?
No, I mean, I think that there's still a dispute going on right now. I think both camps believe that they are in control right now, I believe.
Right.
So I think there's still time left to be discussed about what's going to happen. So we'll all see what happens. But I do think if the Republicans do take control, it will be very disappointing for a lot of the issues that I certainly care a lot about.
All right. You've been getting some good news in your own political world. Congressman Steve Israel, Congresswoman Carolyn McCarthy, and Manhattan Borough President Scott Stringer have decided not to challenge you in a primary next year, though Congresswoman Carolyn Maloney might still. In your opinion, why are they backing off?
Well, you know, for me, I'm really focused on trying to be the best senator I can be. And so, you know, I've been traveling the state and working with constituencies on issues that they care most about and trying to create a legislative agenda that reflects all the priorities of the state. And I do think, you know, people will make their own decisions in their own time. And I do think the politics will ultimately take care of themselves.
President Obama himself took care of some. He intervened personally with Congressman Israel, I understand, to ask him not to challenge you. Is that a president's place? Do we really want the president of the United States squelching democracy in New York State by stopping a primary challenge?
Well, you know, again, you know, my focus is really quite different. I really am not focused on the politics of this because, you know, I wasn't elected. I was appointed. So I didn't have the benefit of a year and a half long campaign and a listening tour. So what I really am focusing on is trying to develop that relationship with all the voters across the state.
I understand. But you must have an opinion as to whether the president did a good thing, a legitimate thing, to try to use his strong arm to stop, you know, a discussion from taking place, which is what a primary is about within a party, or do you think it's legitimate?
Well, I think the president, like all of our leaders, certainly have a right to have an opinion on what's best for the country. And we have a very tough agenda right now. We have the worst economy we've seen in our lifetimes. We have 9.5% unemployment around this country. In parts of New York State, in upstate New York, it's as high as 12%. In communities of color, it's 15%. For our veterans coming home from Iraq and Afghanistan, it's even higher. So I'm very focused, as is the administration, on how do we solve these problems. And having us come together and work together as a delegation, as a majority in Congress and in the Senate, it really can make a difference on moving this legislative agenda and these priorities for the country forward. And so I'm not focused on the politics. I really am focused on trying to create jobs in New York.
Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, my guest on WNYC. Let me go down a list of issues briefly that had many New York Democrats upset at your appointment and just tell the public where you stood and where you stand now, mm-hmm. and then we'll go on to some of the new things that you're working on.
Sure.
Immigration. I read that you were against any path to citizenship for illegal immigrants. Was that true, and is it true today?
No, my position was that I was against amnesty, which means a free ride, and I think that's consistent with a lot of our state representatives. What I am in favor of is an earned path to citizenship and comprehensive immigration reform. I also support the DREAM Act, which I think is a very important piece of legislation that allows young people who are brought here to this country with their parents the opportunity to get a great education and then become citizens.
Did you support the DREAM Act when you were in the House?
We didn't have the DREAM Act up for a vote.
Were you ever asked about it and took a public position?
Not really. It was something that I thought about but really didn't take a public position on. So.
And the earned path to citizenship, mm-hmm. is that different from what opponents have been calling amnesty?
It is different. It's very different. What we want to have with an earned path to citizenship is a way for folks who are here who would like to become citizens can pay taxes, pay Social Security, make sure they're part of our legal system, and earn their path to citizenship.
Was the McCain-Kennedy path to citizenship bill, comprehensive immigration reform bill from last year, mm-hmm. earned citizenship in your definition?
That was a good formulation to start the debate from. The bill had some other flaws, however. One of them that concerned me was that they accepted an 8-year backlog for family reunification. And, you know, on family reunification issues, it's really a core value in America that we really do revere our families, and we very much value families. And, you know, this country was founded on immigrants. It's a country where our heritage and richness as a country is because of that history.
So are you telling us that there was no change of position for you on path to citizenship from your House days to your Senate days?
Well, my focus much more on the House side was on issues of immigration that really affected my district. So one area, for example, was on agricultural workers. When we looked at the Senate bill, they had a guest worker program that was 2 years here, 1 year home, 2 years here. And I opposed that provision because I thought that it was destined to failure, because within 2 years you would be guaranteed an undocumented status, because if people had jobs at home, they wouldn't come here in the first place. And so what I advocated then was that if you were going to have a guest worker program, a better formulation would be 5 years here to be renewed for another 5 years, and then you'd apply for citizenship. Okay. So my focus on the Senate bill was really on the specifics about what worked, what didn't work for my district, where agriculture, for example, was a very important issue.
You got a 100% rating from the NRA in the House, as has been repeated many times. The proposed ban on semi-automatic weapons and so-called cop killer bullets, I believe you were against those bans. Confirm that, and where are you today?
Well, I would support certainly having folks not be eligible to buy Uzis and AK-47s, because no one needs to buy those kinds of military weapons. So I'm willing to look at any bill that will address those issues. We don't have a bill right now. So.
Where were you a year ago on that?
I thought the previous bill on the assault weapons ban was written poorly. I thought it really encompassed issues about cosmetics. If you talk to like a gun expert, they said the bill was more akin to saying you can't have pink guns or blue guns, because it was all very cosmetic related. But I agree, and I always have viewed that military-style weapons like Uzis and AK-47s really shouldn't be available for purchase by anyone, because they're not, certainly not for hunting, and they're not really important for sportsmen and gun enthusiasts. So my focus now is on how we can get illegal guns off the streets.
And the so-called cop killer bullets?
Well, the big issue in New York is this. You know, in New York State, 85% of the weapons used in crimes come from out of state, and 90% of those weapons are illegal. And so when I've met with Mayor Bloomberg and I've met with Commissioner Kelly and New Yorkers Against Gun Violence and the Brady Bill folks, they've said to me that what we really need in New York is a way to stop this illegal flow. And so what I'm going to do is I'm working with those groups on writing legislation now to really crack down on trafficking. Like between 2000 and 2002, the biggest issue was that there was about a million gun crimes, but only 300 and some odd enforcement actions on trafficking. So what law enforcement does not have is the tools they need to really crack down on this. So, for example, what this bill will allow for is allowing the kind of trace data and the kind of investigative tools tools that law enforcement need, and also making sure they can follow these cases. We also need to close gun control loopholes in southern states. So that's an area where I'm hoping my legislation can focus as well. Because what we need to do is end gun violence. It is a huge problem throughout New York State where we have gang violence and gun violence, and we have tragic loss of life, particularly young children who are caught with bullets.
So I appreciate that big picture. But on the cop killer bullets, were you in favor of were you opposed to banning them, and are you now in favor?
I don't really know what you're talking about with a cop killer bullet. If you're talking about certain kinds of ammunition, you'd have to be more specific, because I don't really know what that means. But, you know, my approach now is I'm going to do whatever it takes to make sure that we keep dangerous weapons out of the hands of criminals, that certain kinds of assault weapons are not available for sale, particularly Uzis, AK-47s like that, and making sure that we give law enforcement the tools they need. One area that is a change, just so to answer your question, one of the provisions is called the Tehart Amendment, and I had always had the view that law enforcement and the Tobacco and Firearms ATF has said they didn't want that information publicly available. And the bill said that nothing in this bill shall prevent law enforcement from having access to the information that they need. Well, since that time, I've now met with Commissioner Kelly and Mayor Bloomberg and a lot of experts in this, and they say that despite that language in the bill, that in fact it's been hard for law enforcement to get access to the information that they need because they couldn't ask for data on, they couldn't ask for a trace on several guns at the same time, or they couldn't manipulate the data. And so that's an area where I have changed my view. And so now I don't support the Tehart Amendment because the bill, as stated, is not in truth what the actual facts are. Because the bill said nothing in this prevents law enforcement, but that's not actually how it's been in practice.
Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, my guest on WNYC. Real briefly, one more. I read that you supported renewing the Bush tax cuts for people making up to $1 million. Was that your position, and is that your position?
Yes.
And still is your position?
Well, what my position always was is that we should roll back the Bush tax cuts, and the ones that I thought would be the most appropriate were the tax cuts for $1 million plus, because I wanted to continue to be able to help small businesses in that, up to $1 million category. What President Obama would like to do is that he would like to roll back all tax cuts from 250 and above, and I will support him in that. And I was also of the position, for my entire legislative career, that I would support that kind of tax cut. I just thought the better formulation was $1 million plus because it really carved out the small businesses that are taxed because they might be, two business partners, that kind of thing. And so even going forward, what I'm going to work on is to try to have some kinds of carve-outs in tax policy that support small businesses. Fair. Because I do think they get pulled in when you roll the tax cuts to $250,000.
Fair enough. I know two of the things that you want to talk about are, you've joined the Environment and Public Works Committee, and you've sponsored an amendment to investigate trace amounts of pharmaceuticals in drinking water, and I know you're announcing plans today to address the nursing shortage in New York State. So you want to talk about each of those?
Sure. Well, today we're talking about the fact that there is a grave shortage of nurses all across the state and all across the country. For example, New York City's current vacancy rate for nurses is approximately 7.5%. And in 10 years, New York City will need over 59,000 additional nurses. So we have this grave need for nurses. And one of the biggest problems is we need to train more nurses, that there's not enough training available. So the first thing that my bill calls for is increasing nursing faculty. And we're going to do that by increasing salaries, because faculty salaries can be as much as 15% less than nurses making in the field. So that's one of the resulting one of the reasons for the shortages. We also need to increase spots at nursing schools. This will allow us to actually begin to train more nurses because there's not enough spots for that. We also want to incentivize nurse practitioners and other providers in underserved areas. You know, for example, in my former district, we really had significant nursing shortages in rural areas, and so there were a lot of underserved areas. So we're going to add $300 million to the National Health Service Corps to recruit more nurses. And then the last thing is to invest in long-term development of nursing workforce. So after 3 years of relatively flat funding, we're now going to be working to secure an additional $215 million for the nursing workforce development. So I think that'll help because, you know, one example, when I was in my previous district, we had a VA in Albany, and there was always empty beds. And I said, well, why, you know, with all the needs that our veterans have coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan, how could you possibly have empty beds? And they said, it's because we can't hire enough nurses, and so we can't staff those beds. And that's a very significant problem when we have so many health care needs in this country. So I think that bill will help us move forward. One of the other bills that you mentioned was our baby products bill. You know, I read this report that said that some of the baby products that I use on my kids have carcinogens in them, have trace amounts of formaldehyde and dioxane. And so what we're doing is we're asking the FDA to review what's in these products. And they're you know, baby lotions and shampoos that we all use, and I've been using since my child was born for the last 5 years. So I want to know, are these products safe? So, and I think any mom or dad in America would want to know the same thing. So we're asking the FDA to review it, to see what's in it, and give us a report back as to whether those products are safe. And then the third issue that you brought up was the issue of our drinking water. I read a report, which was quite alarming, that said that there are pharmaceuticals in our drinking water, from hormones to antibiotics, and that it's having these very odd effects on fish. And, you know, for children who are most vulnerable, if these kinds of chemicals, even in trace amounts, are in our drinking water, I want to make sure that our children are safe. So I've asked the EPA to do a review and to give us a report within 2 years on what's in the water, at what levels, are those levels safe? If not, how did these chemicals get into the water, and how do we get them out of the water? And so I think that's the kind of information that most parents are interested in having, and anybody, frankly, to make sure that the drinking water we have in our communities is safe.
All right. I know you got to go. Is there anything else you want to say to our listeners as you're still in kind of a getting-to-know process with New Yorkers around the state?
Just that it's, you know, and it's an extraordinary honor and privilege to represent the state. And what I hope to do over the next year and a half is meet with as many people as I can and talk to them about the issues that they care most about, and then try to translate that into legislation that can really impact their lives. And, you know, for me, I like to do things in our communities, and I used to do these things called Congress on Your Corner. So now as a senator, I'm doing Senate at Your Supermarket. And so I've been going to supermarkets all across the state to meet with people who are shopping and really talk to them one-on-one about what their concerns are. And as I started this call, you know, their number one concern is the economy. People are very worried about losing their jobs, worried about their spouses losing their jobs, or their parents or their children losing their jobs. And they are very concerned. And so what my focus is to work with President Obama and the entire New York delegation to really challenge these high unemployment rates and try to turn the economy around by creating jobs. And so that's my focus, and I really hope that I can make a difference in really making this economy better and creating economic growth.
Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, junior senator from New York, thank you very much for coming on. Look forward to talking to you again.
Thanks. Take care.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We'll take a break and then come back and get three views on the mess, and I mean the mess, in Albany after the Senate coup yesterday. And what does it mean for the policies that are hanging in the balance as the Senate is supposed to end its session in a couple of weeks? Mayoral control of public schools, legalizing gay marriage, the sales tax and property tax rates. Stay with us.